Hey, listeners, are you getting inspired to dive deeper into your learning of EFFT? If so, head on over to Catherine's website to check out her list of upcoming trainings. Some trainings are focused on combining EFFT with young kids and EFFT play therapy. So head on over to her website and we hope to see you in the future. Check it out at katherinedebruin.com, katherinedebruin.com, and we hope to see you in the future.
Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back, listeners, to the Family Express podcast with Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans. We have a very unique conversation in store for all of you listeners today. We are joined by a medical professional, and we're very honored and privileged to have this medical perspective. And we're going to bring a really interesting conversation. Our guest today is Dr. Bobby Passmentier. Bobby is a professor, a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, and the Evelyn Lauder Endowed Chair at Hunter Bellevue School of Nursing. Now, we have like a three-part conversation coming for you all today. This is going to be covering contextual changes in the medical field that has really driven Dr. Passmentier to create some innovative curriculum for the medical professionals, for in particular, the psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner students at Hunter Bellevue. And then from this really innovative curriculum, we're going to talk about how it's practical. What is she actually helping her students do? And then from that, we're going to link it to the therapy room, of course, and working with families and parents and kids. Dr. Passmentier, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Hi, Bobby. I'm so excited to see you. When I met you and heard about the work you were doing, I thought it was just so fascinating. I mean, in this current world we live in where we've got AI, we've got tech, we've got clinicians, doctors, nurses, therapists, who we want to have beautiful bedside table manners and way demeanors working with clients and patients. It certainly seems like this is an area of passion for you, and you have found a way to bring this all together. And I just can't wait to hear about the work that you're doing on the ground in terms of teaching and training.
Great. So I was very interested in creating a simulation experience for psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner students, because normally what they learn in their programs is how to assess symptoms, how to diagnose people, how to prescribe, but they really don't learn how to talk to people and create emotional safety and engage families and talk to people that have experienced trauma and how to listen to families with an attachment ear. So do you want me to go on? And
yeah, please do. You're on a roll.
Great. My interest in teaching students was to come up with a novel way of helping them to be engaged with families. And I wanted the students to learn how to work with family dynamics and when there's attachment ruptures in families. But students usually don't get these realistic experiences to practice. The other thing is that simulation usually emphasizes individual interviewing, but there's a challenge for students to learn how to work with families and to hear multiple perspectives. So how do they pace? How do they create safety? How do they listen reflectively? How do they work with emotional blocks when they're trying to care for example, adolescents, and their parents come in with them?
Wow. Okay. Can we pause here? So for you listeners, Catherine already had previously met Dr. Passmentier, and they've already had conversations about the simulation. And so I want you all to know I'm hearing it all for the first time, I'm already blown away. Because as I kind of had the summary of what was going to be discussed for the episode today, I did not realize that the simulation, one, involved what you use the term, Dr. Passmentier, of standardized patients. I'll ask you what that means later. But I didn't know what exactly that was. And the second piece I didn't realize, which I'm learning right now, is multiple perspectives working with families and having to get not just single person interviews and assessments and symptom conversations, but that your nurse practitioner students are having a simulation experience, getting multiple perspectives from family members all at the same time, which if you listeners could see how big my smile is right now, like that makes me so happy. That makes me so happy because how often, it's so common for patients to be in a hospital or medical professional setting and they have family with them. And I love that your students are getting this training experience right from the start. So I just wanted to pause and let the listeners know that I'm hearing some of the details for the first time, and I'm getting marveled already as we talk.
Great. I think the other thing is, what we've talked about in class is that a lot of times the child is singled out as a problem. And so the parents will bring them in for a therapy session, and they ask the psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner to fix them. And so it's really about having students learning the skills about how they teach parents that it's not necessarily just about the child themselves, but the kind of negative interaction pattern that's going on. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that is so novel for students to learn, that they're not just taking the parent's word for it, but really looking at that family system as a system and that negative interaction cycle rather than singling the child out.
That's amazing.
That is so amazing, because I'm imagining that as nurse practitioners or psychiatric nurses are moving in and being trained to diagnose and to do a good assessment and give medication, here you are saying, hold on, this kid is part of a larger system, and how could some of these behaviors or symptoms be functioning in relationally? And so you're really trying to bring a different perspective on, look a little wider, ask different questions, invite conversation, get curious. And those are amazing skills to learn and to teach, not just for, you know, clinicians, but also for the medical profession and for every single family on this planet, right? Like, we want to be training parents and caregivers and teachers also to think about this kind of thing. So I'm super curious, Bobby, to know, like, how are you doing that? And what are you finding is helping you to teach this perspective and some of these skills?
So one of the things that we do first is we have 3 weeks of instruction. So they learn, first they have to learn a little bit about family systems. You know, what does that mean? They learn a little bit about attachment theory. And then we get into those negative interaction cycles, the relational blocks. And I teach them about the 9-step EFFT change model. And then we spend some time practicing and talking about what is empathetic reflection. How do you reflect back to people that you're talking to and show them that you really understand what they're saying. How do you validate what family members are saying? And then how do you reframe? So those are three skills that we go over in that 3-week period. And then we really talk about the whole idea of the child having attachment needs and the parents having caregiving responses. And that's kind of our mantra throughout the 3 weeks that we're learning about these things. So students are used to kind of learning the didactic, but I keep telling them that, okay, after these three classes, we're actually going to take this into a physical space with standardized patients, and you're going to put these into practice. So I give them a cheat sheet that shows them all the basic skills of EFFT that they take with them. I give them also a cheat sheet where they can remember what empathetic reflection is, what validation is, and what reframing relational blocks are. So there is this instruction before they get into the simulation environment.
That's thank you for breaking that down. Those 3 weeks, that sounds like really important and intensive teaching. Mm-hmm. And I imagine just what a satisfying role for you to be in. I'm curious about two things, not sure which direction to go in first, but you've broken it down into such clear skills that I think would be helpful for all of our listeners to hear. So I'd love to hear about those skills. And then also just like, what is the effect on the students? And has it been helpful? How has it touched their lives, but also their practice? How has it transformed how they diagnose or think about things? I'm just curious.
Oh, I love that.
Where should we go first? I want to know everything. Where should we go first, Rhonda? Which thread do you think?
I think let's do the skills thread first, because Dr. Pasik here, you had given us some really starter sentences for each of the three skills, I think. So if we could do that first, and then if we could hear a bit about how your students are impacted by this additional relational training, that'd be awesome to hear, and I'm already having visions of let's bring it to the West Coast, but we'll get there later in the conversation.
I actually have quotes from the students.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, because I didn't say this, but I'm also a perenatal researcher. And so every time I go into a situation, I think, how can we evaluate that? And how can we, I want to know what the experience of the students are, so I can share some of that with you.
That's amazing.
So the three things that we go over are really like foundational information about EFFT and sort of its background with the attachment theory. We go over the model, the 9-step model. And then we really hone in on those therapist strategies of empathetic reflection, validation, and reframing. And the students are scared, because they've never done this. And so I say, you only have to do three things and you are not going to get graded on this. There's no grading. They do have to write up later in a note, like a, I don't know if you guys use a soap note, but I have them use a soap note, and I tell them specifically, what should be in that note. So I said, you're not getting graded on your performance in the, when you're with the patients. Basically, what you're doing is you're getting feedback. So you're learning how to be better therapists. So they get the foundations of EFFT. They learn empathetic reflection, validation, and reframing. And then they also learn that mantra of child attachment needs and parental caregiving responses and where they can go wrong. So, for example, you know, they learn about how the child can minimize or, you know, or how they can become emotionally reactive, or the parents, you know, how they can withdraw from their child or how they can be overbearing. And so, you know, I give them the charts. Thank you very much, Catherine, for providing those things, but, you know, showing them how the cycle can go awry.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the only three things that we really focus on. I give them the whole picture of EFFT.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have them so that they get this sort of gestalt of the whole, mm-hmm. what it all looks like. But then we hone in on those three skills and the whole idea that children are trying to get attachment needs met and parents, you know, have perhaps mm-hmm. shame about being not being skilled as parents. And so the idea is really to help parents and children be able to attune to each other.
Listeners, check out our book for children of any age. It's called A Jumble of Thoughts and a Tangle of Feelings. It's on Amazon.com. If you know a child out there who is having a tough time but unable to put that distress into words, this book is your guide to helping them figure out what is going on. Whether you're an educator, a therapist, or a parent, we really think this will be a helpful guide for you.
Bobby, I have a crazy idea. Can we do a simulation right now? Can you teach us those three skills? Like maybe Rhonda or I can be the nurse, and then one of us would be the kid or the parent, or...
Sure.
Okay, show us how you would do it.
Okay, so let's say maybe it's easier for me to be the student.
Okay, yeah.
And did you say we have a parent and a child?
Yeah, well, what are they most likely to...
So when they do the simulation, they actually have, it's a three-member family.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So what they've worked with is the same-sex parents and a 17-year-old child who has just come back from the hospital from a suicide attempt 2 weeks
ago. Okay.
So this is the scenario.
Yeah. So maybe one of us is the one mom and then the other is the 17-year-old getting out of the hospital. Okay.
Right. And actually, we have to do this in simulation. We have to practice this before the students come in. So this is good.
Okay.
So as the student, we actually have three students that are in there. One, the first one that builds safety, the second that tracks the negative cycles, and the third student that summarizes and reframes, you know, what has happened. So we give each student a skill mm-hmm. that they have to use, although they tend to fill in for each other. So if one student is not... suddenly loses their language, mm-hmm. The other students naturally just fill in for them.
Nice.
Okay, so if I was the psychiatric nurse practitioner student, I would come into the room and I would say, I'm just going to call you by your name. So,
yeah.
This year. I'll say, do we have one who is the child?
I'll play the child. Sounds good.
Okay. So Catherine and Rhonda, my name is Bobby Posmentier. I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner student, and I'm going to be talking to you about kind of what's been going on in the last couple of weeks and just trying to understand it.
That's you.
Catherine, thank you so much as the mom, you know, for... coming in. And Rhonda, thank you so much for being in this therapy session. I just want you to know that everything in the session will be held confidentially. And I'm just trying to understand kind of what's happening. So I'm just going to come out of the scene for a second. So Rhonda, as a 17-year-old, you're just not engaged at all. Your mom doesn't understand you. You're very withdrawn. And Catherine, you're kind of like hypervigilant with
very worried. Yeah.
You're okay. So worried about what just happened to her.
Okay.
So I was wondering, Catherine, if you wanted to talk a little bit about what has been happening over the last few weeks.
Well, oh, thank you. Thank you, Bobby. I mean, I've just been watching Rhonda like a hawk, right? Like, I just don't want to leave her anyway, anytime, because I'm just worried all the time. Like, I just keep thinking, even if I walk away for a moment, I'm thinking she's hurting. She could hurt herself. Like, is she okay? I wake up in the night and I'm just like concerned about her all the time. So I'm just trying to do a really good job as a mom and just keep eyes on her all the time.
So it sounds like you've really been watching her like a hawk, and it's been so difficult for you to leave her alone, and that you want to keep eyes on her and really keep her safe. And it's been so hard for you to sort of be so vigilant with her and watching her all the time. And yeah, these past couple of weeks must have been really tough for you.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I could lose her there, right? So it is a lot of time, but I mean, I'll do whatever it takes to keep her safe.
Yeah. So that's really a scary thought, that you thought that you could lose her, and that you're going to do everything you can to help her feel safe.
Yeah, I will do whatever it takes to keep her with me.
So, Rhonda, I know you're listening to your mom talking about, you know, how she's so worried about you. And I was just wondering about, you know, what your thoughts about what's been happening in the last couple of weeks. You know, I know that you, a couple of weeks ago, that, you know, you made a suicide attempt. And I was just wondering, you know, how this is kind of landing on you, what you're hearing from your mom.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of hard to just put it into words at all.
Yeah.
Has it been kind of, I'm just wondering if it's been difficult for you to hear your mom be so concerned about you?
Well, I mean, she doesn't talk about that.
She doesn't talk about.
No, I mean, she doesn't really talk about how she's concerned about me or my, you know, it's more just the, what am I doing? What am I doing right now? I can't be alone. You know, it just feels kind of controlling.
So it just really feels like your mom is just trying to control you and make sure you behave in a certain way, as opposed to really listening to what's happening with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
So this is difficult when you hear your mom talking about watching you like a hawk. It's maybe feeling like she's just not really getting you, like what's been happening to you.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't been talking about what's been happening to me, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of what am I doing right now? Can't be alone, keep the door open. But conversations about what's going on for me? No, we haven't had those.
So it's more like what you should or should not be doing, not the,
yeah,
that sort of thing. And she's just not getting at, you know, what this all means to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Can we pause here for a second, Bobby?
Sure.
Just sort of pulling out of this again. Like, this is probably a very typical scenario that you want to prepare your students for.
Yeah.
And also, like, hard conversations, right? Yeah. And so as you're walking them into a situation like this, how are you coaching them? What practical skills are you, how are you teaching them to do this?
We actually practice this in class, and then, you know, I may say things like, you know, in this empathetic reflection, you know, to say to them, I hear you summarizing what just happened, but I'm wondering if you're really reflecting what they've just said to you. I want you to try to use their words instead of your summary.
Okay.
And see how that lands and see how that you know, works with you. And so they do get, you know, that we have them break into groups and have them actually practice reflecting.
So first step sort of that you're teaching them as a skill is like listen carefully and then just reflect. Like, don't sit back and summarize the whole thing. Don't even say too much. Like, stay with someone and reflect. And one way to do that is to start even with a sentence of I hear you saying something like that.
Exactly.
Okay, that's so practical.
Yeah. So that's the first thing that we work on. And then...
So I hear you saying... The first thing you work on is reflect. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. And then the second thing is the validation. So I say, start with the sentence. It makes sense that.
Okay. I hear you saying da 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 da. And then they keep talking. What did you say? It makes sense
that. It makes sense that. So for Rhonda, I would say, wow, it makes sense that you feel like you're just not being heard.
Wow. So you're really just listening, like, where are you now? Then you're bringing this understanding and validation. Oh, well, no wonder. Like, it makes sense that da-da-da-da-da-da, right? Okay. So reflect, validate.
And then the third skill, which is a little harder for them, is the reframing, which is, you know, and this is just in an intake. So the students are only expected to be doing an intake. So I say, mainly what you're going to be doing is reflection and validation. That's going to be the bulk of it. If you get to reframing, fine. If you don't get to reframing, not to worry about it. But if you have the opportunity, so some of the students will be a little bit more advanced in their thinking and they'll be able to start reframing. So, for example, they may say to Catherine as the mom, you know, it sounds like you are so concerned about that. You're so worried that you were going to lose your daughter. And that must have been so hard for you. For Rhonda, it might be, it really sounds like your mom, like you want your mom to understand you and to understand how this experience has been for you. And you feel like she hasn't been there for you.
This is good. I just want to get this in my brain because I think I'm so visual. I would visualize this and it's so practical. It's like you're seeing this mom, you're seeing this daughter, you're seeing this interaction between them, and you just take a moment with each and you're going to reflect. I hear you saying that.
Yes.
Then you're going to build them up and validate. Oh, no wonder this makes sense that you da 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 da. And then you reframe it, which means you see them in the role they're in. You're seeing a parent role, a caregiver. So it would make sense that any parent given this situation is going to be worried about their child's safety and would be hypervigilant in order to protect them and to keep them safe.
That's right.
That's what parents do. That's a parent role. And then you're also sort of seeing the child in a kiddo role, and every child needs to seek that their needs to be met by a parent.
That's
and
right.
So you're thinking like, what is this kiddo's need? Mom, back off. I just need you to understand me, or give me space, or know that I'm good, or Mom, see me, see where I am. Exactly. Something like that. So I like that idea of like, okay, you're here in a parent capacity. What do parents do? What do parents need? Parents keep their kids safe or protective, their comfort. And then what do? Kids need to get their parents' attention for whatever they're needing. So you reflect and then validate and then reframe it into those roles, one side and then the other side.
So I have ICU nurses and ER nurses, and in their mind is a checklist, and they want to get things done as efficiently as possible and as quickly as possible.
And you're talking in terms of medical, physical needs now, right? But you're still working with them?
Their frame in their head is physical.
Yeah.
Like they treat the mental health needs the same as physical needs, and they want to check it off on a checklist.
Mm.
So this gives them the opportunity to be curious and to slow it all down.
Mm.
Slow the pace of everything that they're doing.
You're saying, are these psychiatric nurses that are working in an ICU and capacity?
So there's two types of nurses, ones that have been inpatient psychiatric nurses,
okay,
and others that have never worked with psychiatric patients ever in their mm-hmm. lives. Mm-hmm. And they work in the ER and the ICU and the med-surg areas.
Mm.
Or maybe they worked in labor and delivery, but don't have that frame of reference. And so nurses are trained to be efficient and to get things done as quickly as possible and to grasp the situation as quickly as possible, not to hear it unfold.
And you're saying, regardless of your training, if you're working in any of those units, there is going to be an emotional or mental health component. And paying attention to that is important in terms of people's physical needs or just seeing the whole person, right?
Even more is that these students are transitioning from, most of them are transitioning to becoming psychiatric nurse practitioners.
Ah, okay.
So they're trying to get their land legs money.
Yeah.
How much is that? But they may be going back into their primary areas of work.
Sure. Yeah.
They're going to take these skills with them.
Yeah.
So instead of telling them what to do, checking off the boxes, they're going to come at their patients with a lens of curiosity.
And how to see the whole person in whatever setting they're in can only be important and conducive to the work we do, wherever we work, right?
And the context with their families, because everyone is in the context of relationships.
Our family system, and we know that physical health is affected by emotional health and relational health and support when they leave the hospital, and even how quickly their wounds heal, right? Based on the family and supportive environment. Wow.
So wouldn't it be interesting in an ER where a 17-year-old has come in and just tried to commit suicide to have that EFFT lens right from the beginning?
Wow. Like, yeah. What would that look like? And there's probably not really space in our current health environment to even attend to all that, but wouldn't that be beautiful? Hey, but are there like one or two practical things people could do just to bring that lens?
Well, again, wondering about, doing the empathetic reflection.
Yeah.
And the validation. Wouldn't that be two incredible skills to bring into that environment?
Hmm. So important, especially given, I think, how traumatic some of those experiences can be for people who go through them. Like even the way you're, picked up if 911 is called or a PERT team is called, and the experience in the car and sometimes getting cuffed and the experience in the hospital. I mean, it really does have long-term effects for people, hey? So these human skills, reflecting, validating, reframing, can make all the difference in a critical situation.
It's interesting because some of the students took sides, you know, when they were actually in the scenario. And so one of them actually asked, can't you see that you've caused your mother so much pain? And I was like, oh my goodness. But it was interesting how the standardized patient gave that reflection back about, you know, wow, how that felt to me. You know, as a child, hearing that I hurt my mother. So I needed to be heard.
Yeah.
You took my mom's side.
You can say to the patient, like, hey, did my response right now make you feel better or worse or the same? And this patient would be like, yeah, I went even worse.
Exactly. Yeah. I shut down because of how you took my mom's side.
And which makes the practitioner realize like how much power they have in that moment and how, even though they're unknown to the person, that human interaction in time of crisis makes all the difference, doesn't it?
So the standardized patients are trained to withdraw or to engage based on how the student has responded to them. So they're very flexible.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 15-minute encounter. It's not very long at all, but it's enough that the students have been able to make these assumptions. So we tell them in the beginning, try not to take sides, try to be open and curious. And sometimes it's really difficult for them not to take sides.
Yeah. Wow, Bobby, this is amazing work that you're doing. This is so important. And I think you said earlier you have some responses from the students. Can you tell us?
Oh, yes, let's not forget.
Let me see. It's funny, like this conversation, you don't know where it's going to go. And it's great. I was going to say, you know, there's the we have a pre-briefing and a debriefing that's part of this, which is really, really important.
Sure.
But let me find the student.
Which I can just relate that to, the EFT tango and even how we as EFTers, we learn, right? We go and we do some didactic instruction and then we go into our experiential role plays where we get to put on the character of a client. We get to try out the therapist role. And then we come into the small group or the big group and we process what was that like for us as the client. We give some feedback. Okay, therapist, when you said this, this is how it landed for me. And then I did that. Or we can talk about what it was like to be the therapist on the hot seat. And then we do this exact same thing with our couples and our families, right? And who we're working with in the room. So we explore something, we really want to understand it, get the lay of the land, and then we do something experiential. Can you turn and share with your partner or mom or dad, you know, parent, can you turn and tell your kids something? And then we process, what was it like to hear that? Could you take it in? What was it like to say it? So I can just see all of the parallels in learning that you're bringing to your nurse practitioner students. It's really awesome, Bobby. It's really awesome.
I was also going to say at Hunter College, it's a very diverse student body. So it's 18% white. Students actually come from all walks of life. And so some of them really, they really become immersed in, you know, the scenario. And some of them have had trauma histories as well. And so for them to hear this can be difficult for them. So here's some of the things that the student said. This felt more real than anything we've ever practiced. I was emotionally invested. I cared what happened. I learned how to slow down and validate before moving into assessment. I finally understand what attachment work feels like from the inside. So those were some of the like really powerful comments that the students had. And then I did an evaluation that said that they really wanted more.
Wow.
Oh, this was so powerful for them.
There's so much teaching in the world that is like about, right, top down, this experiential learning. Like everybody wants to learn and be good at what they can do. And this kind of experiential learning just makes a difference. And it changes us and grows us as people.
I think it's a parallel with the idea of EFFT itself, is that it's an experiential therapy.
Yeah.
So it really changes the lens. You know.
It's amazing. It's amazing what you're doing, Bobby, and you're really making a big difference. And I'm also thinking of even our parents who are out there listening today. Like sometimes when we see our kids behaving in certain ways, we forget to bring that emotional frame, right? The mental health frame to the situation. It's so easy for us to also want to just get things done and move along, and we can forget to see the whole person. And I think that the same way that you're helping students be in a simulation and get real-time feedback from the robot or whatever it is who moves away or comes forward, like as parents, remember that if you're struggling with something with your kid, like call a friend, or if you're lucky to have a co-parent, call a co-parent and say, here's what I'm thinking of saying to this kid in this situation. Does this push you away? Does this pull you further? Does this help you feel understood? And try it out, like simulated. I always, when I'm teaching people to be therapists, I say, because this is what I did. I called a colleague on the way home and I say, I'm just going to be my client for a moment. Talk to me, or can you be my client for a moment and say this, and I'm going to lean in this way or that way. Because until we can unfold things and get a better understanding of where people are coming from behind some of these behaviors and symptoms, it's really hard to lean in with any kind of fix, right? The fix actually comes from seeing people and sitting down next to them and understanding their perspective, and then we sort of fix it together. But thank you so much for walking us through what you do. It's so practical and so effective, clearly.
Great. I was going to say that the simulated patients are usually actors, budding actors. And so it's a real chance for them to practice, immersing themselves in the scenario.
Oh, it's not even like a robot. It's an actual actor on the other side who...
They're real people.
Real people who respond. So you can really see your impact on somebody.
Real people with real personal experiences.
Who are trained to be like, go with what you feel. If this doesn't feel good, then let the person know or shut down or have an actual response.
Not
right?
At all.
They're I see. Yeah. Wow.
Some of them have interpreted the roles differently. So we usually have three rooms going at the same time with different sets of real people.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the Catherines, you know, the moms, they'll interpret their role differently.
Yeah. So you really are trained to respond to what's in front of you and not like just learn a canned way of being.
Exactly.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for taking time, Bobby. We really love having you here and appreciate learning from you and look forward to see what you do next.
Great. It was really wonderful to be able to talk to you about this.
Yay.
Thank you.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.